Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we're going to read chapter verse 20 again and finish the purport. Shriyat Patir Yagyapati Prajapatir Diyang Patir Lokapatir Dharapatihi Patir Gatishchanda Kavishni Satvatam Prasidatam Me Bhagavan Satam Patihi. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. May Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on the earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful upon me. Continuing the purport, we have information from Bhagavad Gita 9:10-11 that Lord Brahma, after giving rebirth to the conditioned souls within the universe, instructed them to perform sacrifices. Did I say chapter 9? It's chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita. He instructed them to perform sacrifices and to lead a prosperous life. With such sacrificial performances, the conditioned souls will never be in difficulty in keeping body and soul together. Ultimately, they can purify their existence. They will find natural promotion into spiritual existence, the real identity of the living being. A conditioned soul should never give up the practice of sacrifice, charity, and austerity in any circumstance. The aim of all such sacrifices is to please the Yajñapati, the personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is also Prajapati. According to the Katha Upanishad, the one Lord is the leader of the innumerable living entities. The living entities are maintained by the Lord. Eko bahuna yovidadhati kaman. The Lord is therefore called the supreme Bhuta Brit, or maintainer of all living beings. Living beings are proportionately endowed with intelligence in terms of their previous activities. All living beings are not equally endowed with the same quality of intelligence, because behind such development of intelligence is the control of the Lord. As declared in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, as Paramatma, Supersoul, the Lord is living in everyone's heart, and from Him only does one's power of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness follow. Matap smitir gyanam apohanam cha. One person can sharply remember past activities by the grace of the Lord, while others cannot. One is highly intelligent by the grace of the Lord, and one is a fool by the same control. Therefore, the Lord is Dhyanapati, or the Lord of Intelligence. In all ways, Krishna is the controller. Even when He allows Himself to be controlled by the love of His devotees, even when His devotees seem to be superior to Him, that is the Leela, but the Leela is for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna is always the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer. The living entities, so there's the illusion of Krishna's pastimes. We can call it an illusion. It's under the control of Yoga Maya. But it's not really illusion. It is the highest reality. Krishna actually is. Now, this is the mystery. It's a mystery. Just as it's a great mystery, inconceivable, how Krishna is the same and non-different from all his energies. Similarly, how Krishna is absolutely the controller in all ways, but he's controlled by his pure devotees, is a mystery. This is, anyway, he deputizes his Yogamaya to arrange this. Unless he and the devotees forget his supremacy, they cannot enjoy the pastimes of Vrindavan. The highest spiritual realm, Vrajadham. Is based on forgetting that Krishna is God. It's not that devotees there are unaware that Krishna is God. They have to be. They cannot even enter the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, without being fully aware of the supremacy of Krishna and of being God. You have to be conscious, God conscious, to enter the spiritual world. And Goloka Vrindavan is the highest department of the spiritual world. So all the Vrajabhasis are well aware of the fact that Krishna is God. But then they have to, knowing that full well, they have to ignore the fact. They cannot enter into intimate relationships with Krishna, intimate loving dealings with Krishna, unless they put aside their awareness, their knowledge of the fact that Krishna is supreme. But even in the pastimes of manipulating Krishna by their love, Krishna is actually the predominator. This is the mystery. Krishna never loses his supreme position, even when he voluntarily submits to his devotees. And for the conditioned souls, Krishna is always in control. The conditioned souls may foolishly think that they are independent, but that is a different kind of illusion. The illusion of Yogamaya in the spiritual world is perfectly benign. It is beneficial for everyone involved. But the illusion of, created by the material reflection of Yogamaya, by Mahamaya, the material illusory energy, always causes suffering and always causes restrictions, constrictions. The life of the conditioned souls is limited by the restrictions imposed upon them. Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, Jai Shri Gaurinitai. The conditioned souls are always restricted in their freedom. They cannot enjoy as they would want to. They cannot live freely. So many restrictions are imposed upon them. And it's by degrees. The more rebellious you are, the more you distance yourself from Krishna, the more you break, the more you go against the desires of Krishna, which is understood as breaking the laws of God. So God doesn't like to be a lawmaker. But when living entities enter the material world, the material energy becomes their strict task mistress. She imposes so many rules on them and so many limitations. And the more you become engrossed in materialism, the more you imbibe the demoniac spirit, the more you are restricted. So the demons may think themselves free, but they have no real freedom. The demigods, the saintly people, the godly people, the people who obey the law of God, they enjoy relative freedom. But those who rebel against the law of God, whatever freedom they have is just an illusion. So materialists, they have money in their pocket, they have influence in society, and they think that they're controlling. The extent of their control is they can go to the supermarket and choose among 30 different brands of coffee. But they're addicted to the coffee. They're slaves to their caffeine addiction. And they consider themselves free, that they can buy chocolate coffee or decaffeinated coffee or this coffee or that coffee, 30 different kinds. That's their freedom. They can choose what flavor of hellish existence they like to suffer. It's not freedom. This is an illusion imposed by material energy, that they're thinking that they're free. The more you rebel against Krishna, the more restricted your life becomes in many ways. Your mobility becomes restricted. So if you descend deep into the mode of ignorance, you won't even have the mobility that the animals have. You'll become a vegetable. Living entities become plants. They cannot even move physically. And the human beings also, they cannot move the way they would like. We can't just jump up in the sky and fly like birds. We cannot travel from planet to planet. We cannot escape undesirable situations. And it's not just physical limitation. Maya is very economical. If she can imprison you without expending any physical energy, she'll do it. So many of our fetters, our bonds, are psychological. Just like people are sitting in a city that's being attacked by enemies. Or there's a civil war, and snipers are shooting at people in the street when they try to go to the market. As it was in Sarajevo a few years ago. And people would not leave the city. This is my city, this is my home. I'm not going to leave here, even if people are being shot in the streets. Even if the city is being bombarded, even if there's starvation and famine. We don't care. This is our place. This is where we belong. So, because of our psychological attachment, we cannot leave undesirable situations. That's the controlling power of Maya. Avaranatmika Shakti. She covers our consciousness, so we think that we're happy in a miserable condition, and we don't want to leave it. Such an expertly designed prison. No bars on the walls, on the windows. No locks on the doors, but nobody wants to leave it. Hare Krishna. Socrates tells the ancient Greek philosopher Socrates. Prabhupada identifies that Socrates is practically the only real philosopher in the West. He was the first great philosopher and the last. Western philosophy from then on is, you know, downward, goes downhill. It's just wild speculations, one philosopher after another. But Socrates had some good sense. And he told one fable, story, about the cave, that there were people, suppose there were some prisoners being kept in a cave all their life. They were born in the cave. They never saw anything outside. And they're kept in chains, sitting down so they cannot see they cannot face outside. They're facing the inside wall of the cave. All they see on the wall of the cave, the daylight is coming in, but all they see is the shadows of people passing by, carts, wagons, animals passing by. They see the shadows on the wall. They don't know that there's a real world outside. They only know the shadow on the wall. This is their reality. And then suppose one day someone breaks his chains and gets outside the cave, and he goes out to the real world. First of all, he's blinded by the sun. He goes outside and he can't see anything. He's blind. Then after half an hour or so, he regains his eyesight. And he sees, oh, what we were seeing were just the shadows of the real thing. There's a different world out here. And he decides to go back in the cave, let the other prisoners out of their shackles, and preach to them, come on outside, the real world is there. And he tries to do that. And according to Plato, when he went in, the other prisoners killed him. They didn't want to hear. They could not tolerate the idea that their world was not the real world. So they killed him. This is the story. That even if someone escapes the illusion and sees the real world, nobody wants to listen to him.
There are in so this is coming from the West, from the barbarian West. Practically every culture, every nationality, has its mystics, people who have seen some vision, maybe not of God, the original form of God, but some spiritual vision, some glimpse of the spiritual world. There are mystics even among the Adivasis, the Aborigines in Borneo, in Africa, in Brazil. They have their witch doctors and so on. They've seen something. But what is different about the Vedic rishis that distinguishes them from the witch doctors in the jungle who've also seen something? Because the Vedic sages not only are mystics, they've not only had their private experience of the Supreme, but they are expert communicators and teachers. The Vedic sages give us instruction how ordinary people can approach the same realization. The Vedic sages who have seen the Supreme teach us the paths of karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. There's something for everybody. They give a complete educational system for the retarded children, for the gifted children, for the average children, for the adults, for the old people, everybody. There's cradle to grave, total educational system. That is the Vedic knowledge, the system of Vedic education, arranged by the Vedic sages who have seen the spiritual world, who have seen in their meditation the mantras of the Vedas, but they know how to communicate. They are empowered to communicate their knowledge to us, to the ordinary people of the human race, and elevate us by the systems of karma, jnana, Hare Krishna, thank you, yoga, and ultimately bhakti. So that's why we're interested in, beside being interested in Krishna, Prabhupada was also promoting the Vedic culture. Because this is the culture based on transcendental knowledge that can be made available to everyone, that is practical, that can elevate any conditioned soul if it's properly organized. This Vedic civilization has to be reorganized. It is fallen apart. What is left in India is a perverted reflection of the real thing. The Brahmins have become corrupt. They are no longer performing their responsibilities of teaching, of being pure. They're corrupted. The Kshatriyas have been bought out. They're pensioners now of the Indian government, whatever's left of them. So the Vedic culture has become corrupt and practically defunct. It has to be revised, because this is the culture in which Krishna consciousness can thrive. Our acharyas, Srila Prabhupada and his predecessors, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Bhakti Vinod, wanted that the Daivi Varnashram system be reorganized on a transcendental basis, Krishna conscious basis. Thus we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he organized the Gaudiya Math, he did make at least the ashram distinctions. He put them in place in the Gaudiya Math. That is why some of us are sitting here dressed in white, and some of us are in saffron. This is because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati instituted the divisions of the ashrams in the Gaudiya Math. And Prabhupada carried the same practice into ISKCON. If you go visit the ashrams of the Babajis in Vrindavan and Mayapur, they're all wearing white. They're all ignoring the distinctions of ashrams. But our acharyas, in our special line, want to reorganize this. So already we have the distinctions of sannyasi, vanaprastha, brahmachari, sannyas. What needs to be still implemented are the divisions of brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, and shudra. This is more difficult. A man who cannot live without a wife, he has to admit, okay, I'm a grihastha. If we don't allow someone living with a wife to walk around in saffron. That anyone who's honest has to follow that standard. But when it comes to dividing up the varnas, this is difficult. Nobody wants to be labeled a Shudra. You know, everybody wants to be a Brahmin or a Kshatriya. So we can't just go around giving, you know, some aptitude test and then putting a label on all the devotees. Devotees won't want that. It has to be instituted naturally. We have to organize educational systems for training up Brahmanas, for training up Kshatriyas especially. The other two classes, it's easy to take care of them. We already have schools for business and everything else, and schools for practical, you know, skills. We don't need to have our separate schools for those. But there are no schools in the world for properly training up Brahmins and Kshatriyas. There are universities, but the modern academic institutions are not Brahminical. They're not. They're contaminated by the modes of ignorance and passion. So to have schools where we actually train up noble devotees in the noble occupations of Brahmin and Kshatriya, that has to be instituted from scratch. And then, let anybody who wants to try to be a Brahmin, here's the educational system, come and get your degree. Anyone who wants to try to be a Brahmin, here is the system, here is the school where you can be trained up. Then everybody can be whatever they think they can be. They can try. You know, I want to be a Brahmin? You can try to be a Brahmin. And if that doesn't work, you can try something else. It can be instituted as a natural system, but the occupational duties should be separated. When one person, one devotee, tries to be everything, he has difficulty. It practically leads to a schizophrenic attitude. Split personality. The same devotee who is in a leadership position in ISKCON is supposed to be the manager of the money, also the manager, the protector of the devotees, and also the guru. You know, he has to try to be at the same time Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahmana. And unless someone is special empowered, Shaktivesh Avatar, how can anybody do that without going crazy, trying to be all three? So much more natural is to separate the occupations and let everybody do one thing, not try to be everything at once. Anyway, this is the system of rational organization of human society. People have different propensities. Let them be engaged according to what is natural for them. And let them be trained up properly to do the job. Then things might go more efficiently than they are going now. Okay, so I'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Yes, Prabhu? Does Yogamaya play a role in the spiritual world?
Of course. The pastimes that we see when Krishna descends to the material world, they are the pastimes in Vrindavan, when Krishna brings Vrindavan to the material world. His Vrindavan pastimes, and also his Mathura and Dwarka pastimes, are controlled by Yogamaya. Yogamaya allows the devotees to think that Krishna is their family member, even that Krishna is under their control. This is all arranged by Yogamaya. But these pastimes exhibited in the material world are simply reflections of the original pastimes in the spiritual world. The same dynamics is there in the spiritual world. In the intimate realm of Goloka, in its three divisions of Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, is under the control of Yogamaya, in the spiritual world also, just as we see it here in the material world. That is Krishna's divine energy. She appears as Lord Jagannath's sister, Subhadra. This is Yogamaya. So she is the supreme power, the supreme Leela Shakti. People worship her as Durga, but she has a higher function, that she's arranging Krishna's pastimes. In the spiritual world also. At least she is prominent in Goloka. Okay? Yes. Yes, Prabhu.
Krishna wants to be controlled by his pure devotees.
Yes.
Prabhupada also wanted to control Krishna.
Well, Prabhupada is in the mood of a servant. So I don't, you know, we don't speculate about Prabhupada's intimate relationship with Krishna. Whether he was a cowherd boy or a gopi, you know, it's not for us to speculate about. So I don't know how Prabhupada was trying to control Krishna, because I don't know what his relationship with Krishna is. We just know Prabhupada as the acharya. So in the role of a preacher, a devotee is servant. You know, we want to attract Krishna's attention. We want to be recognized by Krishna by our attempt to serve him. If you want to call that controlling Krishna, to attract his attention, okay, that much we can accept. Yeah. But as far as Prabhupada's intimate relationship with Krishna, that's not the business of the disciples to speculate. That's his private business. He hasn't revealed to us, and we shouldn't speculate about it. Okay? Yeah. But Krishna is obliged to Prabhupada. Just like this, in this way. When the spiritual master installs, when Prabhupada installed the deities in ISKCON temples, he said that, "I'm asking Krishna, please, sir, come and accept the service of my disciples. I admit that they're not fully qualified, but I'm asking you to please accept their service." So that's a way in which Prabhupada controlled Krishna. Prabhupada asked Krishna to accept our service, or especially our deity worship, and Krishna was obliged to accept because his pure devotee is asking him. So that is, yes, a way in which Prabhupada was controlling Krishna. Okay? Yes.
You were saying that ashrama divisions have been implemented since Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's time in the Gaudiya line.
Yes.
But it appears to me that in Vedic civilization there were also some type of training for the ashramas as well.
We're supposed to have that also. Well, Brahmachari is trained up in the Gurukula. Prabhupada tried to institute the Gurukula in ISKCON. We messed it up, you know, because we don't know how to take care of children. At least in the West, we made a mess of it, our Gurukula system. But that's a basic, you know, essential program of ISKCON, is training up the Brahmacharis. But ideally, Brahmachari should get his training from the age of 5, not from the age of 25. That's a little late to start. Now we get adults coming and becoming brahmacharis. So we give them what training we can, but the real brahmachari training should begin from childhood. And that's supposed to be one of the main functions of ISKCON, one of the main programs. Then again, we can't expect the institution to organize it. The parents should be, you know, taking responsibility to help organize the education of their children, at least as far as providing money and support. So, but devotees have to be aware that this is education is our prime business. And how are we going to educate the general society if we're not thoroughly trained? How can we take up the role of leading society spiritually if we're not trained up how to do the job? You can't function in such important work without having the training for it. Okay.
How are grihasthas trained up? How are people trained up to enter the grihasthasram in Vedic civilization? Is there any, there must have been some way.
Not separate. The brahmachari, years spent in the guru's ashram as a brahmachari, that is the training for grihastha life. You know, you don't have to have sex education, you know. You don't, and as far as occupation, then according to your varna, you're trained up to make money. A brahmin is trained how to do worship and how to teach. And if someone's in a different class, he should get practical training. So he can live as a grihastha, make a living according to his varna. That has to be there. So brahmin, especially the gurukul is especially for brahmins and kshatriyas. The Vaishyas, they can go into an apprenticeship program with their father or with some other businessman. And the Shudras should just be employed in work, even in childhood. So that's the practical training for everybody. But for especially for the Brahminical and even Kshatriyas, the preparation for Grihastha life is a strong Brahmachari training. learning how to control your senses and mind. Then you can be a good grihastha. That's the purpose of brahmacharya. It's a training program for both grihasthas and sannyasis. Some of the children, some of the boys will become grihasthas, a few will become sannyasis. But they're both trained up in the Gurukula as brahmacharis. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.